This episode of Felon True Crime is brought to you by WordPress. Millions of people every day go online to search for local businesses. Would your small business show up in one of these searches? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, and to hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website. The beauty about a WordPress.com website is that you don't need prior experience to set one up, and you don't need to hire someone to do it for you. WordPress.com will guide you through the process. You can choose from hundreds of awesome designs, and every plan includes a free custom domain name. You can boost your online visibility with built-in search engine optimization and social sharing, or you can even activate other WordPress plugins for the functionality of your individual business needs. You can take comfort in knowing that with a WordPress.com plan, expert support is there to help you focus on what really matters, and that is growing your business. 28% of all websites run on WordPress. Create your very own WordPress.com site and you'll see why. And so to get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase, go to WordPress.com/felon to create your own website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/felon for 15% off your brand new website. WordPress.com/felon.
This episode of Felon may contain disturbing content, including descriptions of violence and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Episode 6 of Season 1 recounted the tragic story of Carly Ryan, a teenager who was catfished through MySpace by a middle-aged man from Victoria who had befriended her online under the guise of Brandon Kane, a teenager from Texas who shared Carly's interest in music and fashion. Carly's fairy tale online romance with Brandon came to a tragic end when his true identity was revealed and Carly was murdered in a vicious assault. Following Carly's death, her mother made the resolution to prevent this tragic story playing out again, and the Carly Ryan Foundation was formed to share cyber safety awareness to young people who could potentially find themselves in a similar situation. Not only has Carly's mother, Sonia, used her story to warn other teenagers of the dangers of interacting with strangers online, but she has used her position to campaign for tougher laws to protect young people from potential predators. And so as an update in this story, 10 years on, after the death of young Carly, Sonia Ryan achieved her goal, and a law to give police more power to protect children from online predators was finally passed in the Parliament. The law will be known as Carly's Law.
Yeah, it's absolutely overwhelming for me to think that she didn't go through all that suffering for nothing. That the suffering she endured for hours and hours, I don't even know how long, that there's something good has come out of something so horrendous and cruel. And that is just so powerful and sends a very powerful message to criminals out there who are working right now to manipulate, lure and try and infiltrate the lives of innocent, beautiful kids. That as a society, we will stand up against them and we have zero tolerance for this kind of behaviour. We must protect our children. They are our future, literally, and we must do everything we can as a community to protect them.
After tireless campaigning and lengthy negotiations, the federal government has agreed to significant changes to the criminal code that will make it easy for police to prosecute online predators. The new laws fill a gap in the criminal code by allowing police to intervene when a predator is preparing to cause harm. This will include when a predator lies about their age to a child, Justice Minister Michael Keenan says a tough new sentence of 10 years imprisonment for convicted offenders will also serve as a strong deterrent for the vile grooming of young Australians. Since this law was passed, an Adelaide man who posed as a teenage girl to groom and abuse children was the first person charged under Carly's law. The need for such a law has been reiterated time and time again, with multiple cases of individuals misrepresenting themselves online for the purpose of exploiting the young and vulnerable. Carly Ryan's murder was the first of its kind in Australia, but unfortunately, it would not be the last. Those with an evil heart seem to have a talent for destroying anything beautiful which is about to bloom. Cynthia Ryland. They walk together along the bush trail. Sun streams through the arching trees. Birds sing. A creek spills slowly down a small valley, and they sit to rest. Her eyes scan the landscape, eagerly taking in every detail, and she listens to every sound. But there is a struggle. She falls, then everything goes black. Everything is now silent. No sun, no peaceful sounds, just darkness and silence. The scene is still tranquil, a place of peace. She had felt at home there, with nature, and now she is embraced by it, as the water washes over her and she slips away. In researching Carly's story, the case of Nona Balmasoff would often be referenced, and many links to media articles would be suggested. In 2010, 3 years after the death of Carly Ryan, Nona Balmasoff was befriended by a stranger on Facebook. At the time, Nona was 18 years old and living with her family in their home in Cecil Hills, a western suburb of Sydney, approximately 40 kilometres out of the city. Nona's parents were supportive and loving and encouraged her in all of her pursuits. She had recently graduated from high school and was eager to establish herself in a career. Nona had a keen interest in animals and had a strong desire, since she was a young girl, to work with them. Motivated by this passion, she enrolled in a TAFE course titled Work in the Animal Care Industry, TAFE being what would be called Community College internationally. Due to her interest in animal care, Nona frequented online forums, seeking out and interacting with like-minded people where they would share their common love of animals. In late April of 2010, Nona was contacted on Facebook by a man named Jason Green. Jason introduced himself as a team leader employed by the Wildlife Information and Rescue and Education Service, known more commonly by the abbreviation WIRES. During online conversations, Nona shared with Jason that she was studying in order to work in the animal care industry. The pair bonded over their common interest, and they began interacting online fairly regularly. During these chat sessions, Jason, who was quickly impressed by Nona's passion for animals, offered her an employment position within the WIRES organization. The mission of the WIRES organization is stated as being to actively rehabilitate and preserve Australian wildlife and inspire others to do the same. To Nona, this seemed like a perfect fit, and she was eager to do whatever it took to secure the position. Prior to commencing full-time employment, the position required some on-the-job field training, and Jason informed her that this would be provided over several weeks. With the prospect of employment in her chosen field, Nona found it hard to contain her excitement and couldn't wait to share the news with her family. Following further online briefings with Jason, arrangements were made for the pair to meet up for an orientation session. On Wednesday the 5th of May, 2010, Nona boarded a train for Lamia, a southwestern suburb of Sydney, approximately 20 kilometres south of her family home in Cecil Hills. Arriving at Lamia station, Nona was greeted by Jason. This meeting was to be an introductory training session and part of the recruitment process into the WIRES organisation. During this first meetup, the pair walked a short distance to a nearby bush track while Jason gave her a rundown of her prospective employment position. Prior to this meetup, Nona had told her mother that this visit would be the first step to joining the wildlife organization, and she enthusiastically recorded the occasion in her personal diary and on Facebook. On Thursday, the 6th of May, Nona met with Jason again at the same location, and again, as part of her training, they walked the same stretch of bush track. This training continued on Friday the 7th, Saturday the 8th, and Sunday the 9th of May. Nona's training sessions with Jason were uneventful. Each time they met, it was at the train station, and they made their way to the bush trail where they would continue with the induction, observing the flora and fauna of the surrounding landscape. Nona shared with friends and family that she enjoyed the time she spent in nature and the company of Jason. Their friendship that had begun on Facebook had now extended to the real world, but it would soon be revealed that Jason may not be as friendly as she had first thought. On Monday, the 10th of May, Nona returned to meet Jason as she had done for the past 4 days. As the pair hiked along the same trail near Smith's Creek Reserve, the sound of birds and insects swirled around them as they trekked deeper into the bush. But these tranquil surroundings would soon be the backdrop for a disturbing incident. Nona, who was walking ahead of Jason, was suddenly startled by someone grabbing her from behind and restraining her. In a blurred flurry of violent movements, and before she had time to even think to struggle, a blindfold was placed over her face. Her hands were tied up behind her back, and she was then pushed to the ground. Her attacker then laid on top of her and posed a question. What would you do? Nona pleaded with Jason to get off. He replied, I'm not joking, and applied more pressure on the now panicking teen. I'm serious. What would you do if someone kidnapped you or tried to rape you? With this, Nona started to cry, and Jason quickly stood up and freed her. As she tried to compose herself, Nona shared with Jason that she felt that she was in shock. Jason pulled out a mobile phone from his pocket and made a call. He recounted the incident to an unknown person on the other end of the line. He then asked Nona if she thought she needed an ambulance due to the shock, to which Nona declined. In discussions prior to this event, Jason had told Nona that he would teach her some self-defense, something he said she would need as part of her employment. He explained that she would need to know what to do in a violent situation if someone tried to kidnap or rape her while in the bush. But despite the attack being a simulated one, Nona was left shaken and shared it with her cousin when she returned home. On Wednesday, the 12th of May, still reeling from the event with Jason on the Monday prior, Nona met with him again. She had said her goodbyes to her family and had told her mother that she was attending an overnight training camp as part of her recruitment program. She mentioned that she expected to be paid for the time spent on the camp, and her diary entry stated, Camp night, double pay after 5 p.m. Get paid. Nona headed out around 9 a.m. that morning and made her way to Lamia on the train, on what would be the first night she had slept overnight by herself away from the family home. Nona had also mentioned to her family that she would be meeting with 2 men, her trainer Jason Green and another who would be assisting with the training on the camp. While her family was concerned and raised this with her, Nona, motivated by the end goal of securing employment, assured them she would be fine. But on the afternoon of Thursday the 13th of May, Nona failed to return home, and that evening her family reported her missing at Liverpool Police Station. Nona's family also contacted the WISE organization, hoping to gain information on the whereabouts of Jason Green, the field trainer that had taken Nona under his wing. With this inquiry came the startling revelation. There was no one by the name of Jason Green who was employed by the Wildlife Service. With Nona's disappearance reported to police, the Sydney Morning Herald published a report on May the 14th, 2010. The report read, Police are searching bushland southwest of Sydney for a teenage girl missing after arranging to meet 2 men she befriended on Facebook. Nona Belmasov, 18, of Cecil Hills, has not been seen or heard from for 2 days, and her mobile phone is turned off. She told her family she was going camping in bush outside Campbelltown with two men she befriended recently on Facebook. One of the men, a 20-year-old, denies meeting Nona, while police have not been able to contact the other man, who is believed to be aged about 30. With an investigation of Nona's Facebook interactions, the identity of the two men was quickly established. Nona had befriended a 20-year-old man on Facebook 2 months prior to her disappearance, a man by the name of Christopher Denevig. As was the case with Jason Green, the two had bonded over a common interest in the outdoors and wildlife. It was on the 27th of April that Nona had received a friend request from Jason Green. Her interactions with Christopher Denevig had ceased by this time, and she soon found herself drawn into online chat sessions with Jason about animals, which eventually led to attending the training sessions with him. There was significant communication online between Nona and Jason, and Nona and Christopher. This combined with information provided by Nona's family that she had planned to meet with two men for a camping excursion, led police to believe that they were both persons of interest in relation to Nona's disappearance. In the early hours of Friday the 14th of May, 2010, police attended the home of Christopher Denevig. Denevig acknowledged that he knew Nona, stating to police that the two had met on Facebook and that they both shared an interest in working for Wires. He also stated that he had last seen Nona 3 days prior, but he had not seen her since. He claimed that he had no knowledge of her disappearance and provided police with an alibi. In all their investigations, police were unable to locate Jason Green, and the only information that they had on him was that he was 30 years old and listed on his Facebook page that he worked for Wires. Christopher Denevig, who was currently in custody and implicated as a member of the trio who had planned to go camping together, couldn't shed any light on where Jason Green could be. Extensive searches of the bushland, described by Nona's family, continued, and detectives accessed electronic resources for any signs of life from her, including her bank account activity. It was with this search that they would establish a new lead in the case. Investigators determined that Nona's bank account had been accessed at 5:24 p.m. on Wednesday, the 12th of May, at an automatic teller machine near Lumiere Station, not far from where her training sessions with Jason Green had occurred. The first time it was accessed, it was a balance inquiry. The second transaction was a withdrawal of $170. With this revelation, police accessed CCTV footage of the facility where the ATM was located, and in turn, they revealed the true identity of Jason Green. Depicted in the CCTV footage accessing Nona's bank account was Christopher Denevig. When confronted by police with this evidence, Denevig soon shared a cascade of shocking admissions. He admitted to befriending Nona on Facebook, not only with his own profile, but also under the fake identity of Jason Green. It was under the guise of a 30-year-old Wires trainer. Denevig had lured Nona to the bush on a number of occasions. He also admitted to taking Nona's purse, accessing her account, and withdrawing money. But this would only be scratching the surface of his guilt. Denevig led investigators to an isolated bush trail. It was a trail that he'd walked with Nona on many occasions. Along the remote area of the track, under the guidance of Denevig, police soon located Nona Belmasov. She was lying face down in a small creek. Her belongings were located nearby on the creek bank. Denevig confessed to being responsible for Nona's death, and he made the claim that they were sitting alone on the bank of the creek and that he had blacked out. When he regained consciousness, Nona was lying face down in the creek. He claimed that he had observed her for 30 to 120 seconds and saw no movement. He made no attempt to remove her from the water or call for help. He made the conclusion that Nona was deceased and fled the scene. And shortly after, he accessed her bank account. Denevig's claim of blacking out was soon found to be at odds with his behavior in the days prior to Nona's death. When quizzed by police as to how he knew Nona's PIN number to access her account, he shared with his interrogators that he had used a casual conversation about forgetting his bank card number in order to obtain hers. In this discussion, Nona shared with him that she used her birth date. This admission suggested to police that there was a much more of a conscious decision to take Nona's life than he was ready to admit, and they quickly devised a plan to catch him out. On the 19th of May, while in custody for the death of Nona, Denevig engaged in conversations with other inmates. During these conversations, he made some shocking confessions. He shared that he had pushed Nona, and that she had fallen backwards, and that she had hit her head on rocks. He then made the claim that he took hold of her in the water and forced her under until she drowned. The inmates with whom Denevig shared these dark revelations were in fact undercover police who were wearing listening devices that captured every detail. As listed in the court documents, an excerpt from the coroner's report stated, "The cause and manner of death of Nona Belmasov could not be determined on autopsy. At 9:40 p.m. on Friday the 14th of May 2010, she was located lying face down in a small creek within Smith's Creek Reserve. The autopsy report, though concluding that the cause and actual manner of death could not be determined, stated there were features during the postmortem that were suggestive of drowning." At a Sydney RSPCA shelter, there is a plaque dedicated to the memory of Nona. It reads, "In memory of Nona Belmasov, 1991-2010, lover of animals, rest in peace." Nona's family were understandably left devastated by the tragic event, but they took some comfort in knowing that her killer had been brought to justice. With undeniable evidence against him, Christopher Denevig was convicted of the murder of Nona Belmasov and sentenced to a jail term of 28 years. A disturbing postscript to the story of Nona, it was soon made public that Denevig had a history of violent attacks on teenage girls and was actually on parole after serving a 6-month sentence for attacking a 15-year-old girl on a bush track, in which he pinned her down, sat on top of her, and held her at knife point. And in yet another similar attack, in 2009, Christopher Denevig lured a female acquaintance to a bush track under the premise of rescuing a baby kangaroo. The young girl, who as with Nona, loved animals, agreed. When they arrived in an isolated section of bush, he produced a box cutter and restrained her by sitting on her with her hands behind her back and a knife to her throat. He rambled erratically about cutting her up and eating her. Christopher Denevig will be eligible for parole in 2032. Thanks for listening and for your continued support. If you're a fan of the show and keen to help spread the word, please be sure to rate and review on iTunes or your preferred podcast app. To get in touch or to take a look behind the scenes, Felon is on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under Felon True Crime. Or to join our chat group, just search for Friends of Felon True Crime on Facebook. A few listeners have asked about merchandise, so if you're interested in representing Felon, please check out the store on threadless.com. This episode was made possible by WordPress. Their sponsorship helps to ensure that the content can continue to remain free of charge. And finally, a special shout out goes to Aussie rapper Taunts. A big thanks for providing the content warning at the intro. If you're a fan of hip-hop with a dark twist, make sure to check him out. The new album, Life, Death, Truth, is out now, and you can stream or purchase it on Bandcamp. Fans of true crime will appreciate the film clip for the track Ghost. Just search on YouTube for Taunts. That's T-O-R-N-T-S. To take us out, here's a clip from the album.
Taunts, hide goons. Last breath. I see the devil in the form of a human on a chariot, pissing on my body at the scene of the accident. And I don't know why, but he throws my decapitated body in the bottom of a lake that is stagnant. Now I'm gone like the Titanic captain. I'm a ghost in the ether, no speech, so I can't tell my fam or my gang what happened. Tough break from a size snake, metal from the car hit my face like Carl Williams with the weights. No heart, no spade, no clubs, just a demon that is holding the ace. Now I'm floating around here, where the fuck is time? Feel like the kid from the movie Insidious, lost in the further. With the bleak spirits, I repeat their decline. Repeat their decline. I wanna ride like Jesse James. Bring a lot of pain, crossbow with the aim, sharp knife to the veins, or something that I borrowed that could blow out his wretched bitch made brains. But I can't, body in the water like the ark. Trigger finger eaten by the fish, and I can't drink with Billy in the park. Really just a ghost in the car, I'm lost in the past. Did the bullet just pop my brain? Last thing that I saw was the cane on the bar at the slum motel. No sand, but I caught me a shell. Wrong place, wrong time, wrong life. Should've known that I couldn't live happy with a son and a wife. Now I'm getting buried down by a cunt on the pipe in a hole that's an accurate size. And I can't get past this, stuck in the darkness, dimmer than a low IQ. Wish I could rewind this soon. This path is a harder way like air zooms. I think of my friends, I think of how they'll be wanting revenge. I think of the start and the end, my face as a child to the fans that I made from the mic and the pen. I'm broken up, ain't gonna mend. No physical form, death's in the wind. I'm looking for a door in the sky, but I can't see shit, cause the pits of eternity ain't got a hinge or a handle. Need me 100,000 Roman candles. CT was the victim of an ambush. TV didn't broadcast the angles. The cap went whoosh.